Something's going on in the woods. Something's going on.
They're not dogs. They're not coyotes. What could it be, right?
I had an encounter with a skunk ape, and it completely altered the course of my life.
I found a skull. Are you guys going to want to come film this?
Put him out.
I just see it.
Sightings of a UFO hovering over a barn.
Millie woke up from a dream, and when I went into the bedroom, she said there's a monster on the wall.
They saw that the creature had run through a barbed wire fence. They were able to obtain hairs. They sent the hairs to their lab, and it came back as an unknown creature.
What is up, guys, and welcome back to the most bizarre show on the internet. I am the one that they call Shane Squatch.
And I'm Oren.
And today for you guys, we have something that was suggested to me by my significant other. Should be a pretty fun show. Diving more into the folklore / local legends type aspect of things. Trying to hit a little bit of the more obscure stuff like we've been tending to do lately. But before we get into everything, of course, we have to do news and updates, front of house, all of that kind of stuff. So as far as events go, you don't have anything coming up, right? Next thing we got is Small Town Monster Fest.
Yep, that's the next thing we got on our end, and that's when we'll all be together. So you can go ahead and tell the listeners about that a little bit if you want to.
And if you guys are lucky, you guys can be all together with us too. So you guys got to definitely make sure you come. But if you are planning on coming, make sure you guys mark June 29th in downtown Canton, Ohio at the Doubletree by Hilton. And tickets are going to be free for kids 12 and under. But for everybody else, you guys are going to have to make sure that you go and scoop yourself a ticket. We do have the link available down in the show description so you guys can find it quick and easy. And again, if you guys are planning on coming out, let us know so that we can know you by face, know you by name, and be able to say what it's up to you. And maybe we can all hang out after and get a couple drinks or something. Yeah, we'll figure it out, I guess, depending on how the day rolls on.
I don't like drinks. They're yucky.
they're allotments, not drinks.
That's right. Allotments are great. Drinks are yucky. But anyway, you guys know the drill. Don't forget to follow Bizarre Encounters and Open Minds Media on Instagram and Facebook and all the other social medias. And check us out on YouTube and TikTok and the Discord and all that good stuff. And don't forget to submit questions for Bizarre Inquiries, our Patreon exclusive mini show.
Still need to collect a bunch of questions for that. We got a bunch when we first started off, and we really haven't gotten any from anybody. So I'm just going to say it again on the air. We need them questions if you guys want that show to roll on. Can't do it without you guys. I mean, we can do our tournaments and stuff, but we can't do the typical questions unless you guys throw them. And if we come up with our own questions, it's not nearly as much fun. So, I mean, again, if you guys want Bizarre Inquiries to stick around, you guys got to make sure you guys submit those questions. And if anybody has an encounter to report, no matter how big, no matter how small, you guys can report those to OMMEncounterReports@outlook.com. And depending on what you want to do with it, I would like to do some collaboration episodes as far as, you know, having some listener encounters where we kind of sit back and kind of discuss different things. We can take those in, of course, as somebody typing them out, or you guys can record yourself on your phone. You guys can send it to us through email. And then if you're okay with us using it on the show, definitely let me know. And if you guys aren't okay with that and you guys just simply want somebody to talk about with your experiences, we're always here to listen. We're always here for that too. If you don't want us to tell the story to anybody else, that's absolutely fine. We can sit and we can listen to you and hear everything that you got to say, and, you know, not look at you like you're crazy. And if you guys are close enough to us, we may even possibly be able to investigate those encounters ourselves. But again, none of that will happen unless you guys submit those encounter reports. And I guess kind of to throw this one in, because we were talking about it last week, got everybody excited. We got to give them a little pre-breaks in the middle of the front of house stuff. I recently took in a I guess Bizarre Encounter would be a good way to describe it, at OMM Encounter Reports. And I won't be able to show you guys the pictures. They were posted on the Instagram though. So if you guys want to see the pictures that they sent me, you guys can go and check out the Instagram. You guys will be able to check that out. But what we got today, and I want to get Oren's opinion on it too, is this. They say, I am pretty sure I saw DMT elves. I was 10 years old, spending the night at my parental grandma's house. I was having trouble going to sleep. there was a baby shower going on underneath my window, which was on the second floor. I was closing my eyes and trying to sleep. I opened my eyes and saw a little creature, about 3 to 3.5 feet tall, right in front of me, walking past my bed, looking at me with a spindly finger to its mouth as if it was shushing someone. Something else. I was not afraid. I felt a sense of calmness and was able to get to sleep and sleep all night before rising to tell my parents about this in the morning. Then my dad revealed to me he had seen two creatures, exactly as I described, sitting on the end of the bed, looking like they were laughing and whispering together. He was 10 at the time, like I was. He was not afraid and never spoke of it for 25 years. When it happened to me, before he died, he would talk about these creatures now and then, but never had an explanation. No one else that I know of ever reported seeing them. And the depictions, I guess I can show Oren here, but for all the, everybody else, you guys will have to look on the page. They kind of look like I guess I don't want to put any connotation on it yet, but I'll show you and then I'll get your opinion on it.
Yeah, they almost look like little gnomes or something like that.
See, I was almost thinking like Pukwudgie, depending on like what area this person was coming from, because
definitely,
especially with like the hair on the full body. I know everybody kind of has like different depictions of what these things might look like, but it seems like a lot of like the Native American lore, when you really dig into it, more often than not, they kind of just are described like they have like this porcupiney kind of like spindly hair on their body, which almost kind of looks like that. And again, there might be different variations. Like these ones had grayish looking hair in the picture. I mean, they could have been older ones, especially considering they're around at the time of her dad, or if we're getting into the whole fae element of things. I mean, time isn't linear with that. We all know that somebody will go into the fae world, think they're there for like 10 minutes and come back 2 years later. So, I mean, just some possible ideas and our explanations to it.
Yeah. I think it's kind of interesting, that the person who submitted this story described them as DMT elves, but you know, they go on to say they were whatever, 10 years old at the time. They obviously weren't on DMT when they saw these things. You know, so I think that's interesting that they chose that wording to describe them.
Like we're always saying, frame of reference, man.
Yeah. And, you know, without seeing the pictures, kind of what it made me think of is, you know, what if this was like a gray alien? Because, you know, there's the whole thing with the grays, you know, kind of following family lineages and repeatedly abducting people in the same family and things like that. So that's where my brain went to first. But then when you showed me the picture, it kind of doesn't jive with the whole gray abduction angle. So it's a pretty interesting one.
Unless you're looking at screen memories, that's also a possibility too.
Yeah, that's true. And we've talked to people who kind of talk about the grays wearing masks or whatever when they present themselves in these kind of abduction type situations. So I think that's where my mind tends to go at this point, is it was something more akin to that than an actual like DMT, you know, out of body experience type thing. What do you think?
I mean, I still get into, of course, like the fae element, but when you get into the fae element too, it also gets into the extraterrestrial element, because there's a significant amount of similarities between UFO / fae experiences. So, I mean, maybe the dimensions on how it works, they're all coming from somewhat of the same place, that it's some place that's just off of our reality. And that's why there's so many different similarities, even with like missing time, things like that. Or again, I kind of gear back towards, depending on what area they might be in, possibly even like a Pukwudgie encounter.
Yeah, no, I think, like I said, I tend to think this wasn't what we typically think of as like a DMT elf or DMT entities, like we talked about in the episode we did not so long ago. But yeah, I like the Pukwudgie idea. And then I like I said, the idea of just a, you know, true to foil, extraterrestrial, ultra terrestrial, whatever that means, wearing a mask. And, you know, this is what it presented itself as to this person when they were a child.
Especially if they're coming at a 10-year-old, you come across as like a little 3-foot fuzzy creature. It's not very intimidating to the kids. So they might even actually sit down and have a conversation with you versus being like horrified and trying to run from you, because you're like inviting looking to them.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of where I go with it. It has a lot of hallmarks, especially with the family aspect of abductions. So
yeah, of course. And if anybody wants to support the show, a couple different ways to do so. Number one, of course, is to go and join the Patreon. Over there, I recently updated the tiers probably about 3-4 weeks ago now. A lot of new benefits for lower tiers, more benefits for the upper tiers. And there also is a 7-day free trial for the $3 tier and the $5 tier. If anybody wants to check it out and see what it's all about, you'll get Bizarre Encounters, Inquiries of Our Reality, Bizarre Inquiries, every single episode of that. And of course, you'll get early access to all of these shows that we do before they come out. So you'll probably get them at least like a week or two ahead of time most of the time. And of course, you get exclusive merch store discounts, which leads me to the next thing. If you guys aren't a member of the Patreon, you guys can still go and check out the OMM merch store. It's another great way to support the show. You guys can pick up merch for this show, Inquiries of Our Reality, Bizarre Inquiries, and a bunch of other different designs that I've worked on that don't have podcast logos on it, because I know not everybody likes wearing that stuff, but they like wearing all the spooky paranormal stuff and Sasquatch stuff. So got a bunch of that type of stuff. And until the end of April, if you guys use code CRYPTID10, you guys can get 10% off of your orders. So make sure you guys take advantage of that before that is gone. And if anybody's interested in podcast production services, you guys can shoot me a message on one of the Open Minds Media pages. Whether you just started a podcast, you're thinking about starting a podcast, you already have a podcast, we can coordinate something, we can make something work. And something else that I was thinking about expanding into is if there's any authors out there that are interested in having some form of an audiobook done for their book, whether it's my voice reading it, your guys' voice reading it, you want sound effects, whatever, I want to start working on some audiobooks too. So if that's another thing you guys might be interested in, don't forget to shoot me a message at Open Minds Media.
And a big shout out and thank you to our awesome sponsors, our buddies Rick and Hans with I Know Squatch. Check them out for all your squatchy gear needs. Joe at Cryptoteology, he's always killing it with your wearable cryptid favorites.
Still gets me every time. I gotta laugh. I'm sorry.
We can't not do it at this point.
And don't forget to go and check out Snarly Yao if you are a fellow person that has a beard. He has an awesome line of natural beard and body products that all have this fantastic smoky cedar with a hint of mint scent. I use it every single day for my beard. Absolutely love it. And it makes my beard crazy soft.
And Dave, a.k.a. the Snarly Yao, he puts on a lot of really cool cryptid-themed events in the West Virginia area. We're going to be at his event in October, Cryptid Halloween. We're going to be speaking there. So if y'all are in the area, definitely check it out. He's an awesome guy and, like I said, puts on some awesome events.
And more often than not, he does free admission for his events. So you guys can even just pop in, hang out, meet some of the vendors and stuff. So again, if you guys are anywhere near the area, you guys don't have anything to do on a weekend, definitely go and mark your calendars and go check out some of the awesome stuff that he's throwing. And getting into the affiliate links, our newest affiliate link / sponsor of the show is Organite, and he creates these fantastic pyramid and different pieces that all have to do with basically taking in negative energy, putting out positive energy. They're really, really cool. He spends a lot of time on them. He makes them all himself. If anybody's interested in checking that out, you guys can use our affiliate link. And if you guys want to receive 10% off your order, you guys can use OMM at checkout. And to all of my paranormal investigators out there, if you guys haven't already checked out the Chattergeist or listened to our recent episode where we had Barry on talking about the Chattergeist, definitely worth checking out. It's my personal favorite device that I use every single time that I go out. Constant new modifications going on for it. He's always updating the programming and everything to make it even better. And if anybody has any technical questions on that whatsoever, you guys can always hit up Barry over there on Dimension Devices. Again, he is the guy that programmed and developed it, so he'll be able to answer any of your guys' technical questions. And again, if you guys decide that you guys want to pick one up for yourself, you guys can use the affiliate link down in the show description, and it'll help us out a little bit. And I know that there is some type of discount that he's doing now. I think it's like 10% off for anybody that uses an affiliate link. I don't remember what it is offhand right now, but if you guys want to check that out, it will also be down in the show description with the affiliate links.
And all this other shit we've talked about is also in the link tree in the show description. All right, so tonight's episode is a deep dive that Shane kind of put together. It's one I'm excited to dig into, kind of from my neck of the woods. So we've been kind of Carolina's heavy here recently, but that's okay. So Shane, why don't you tell everybody what we got going on tonight?
And man, that's completely unintentional too. And like I was mentioning earlier in the show, my significant other, Gabby, she suggested this one to me because I think she heard about it in one of her shows, said it was something she hadn't heard about before. I started digging into it, and you'll see there's a lot of similarities with a lot of other stuff that we dive into. But I haven't heard anybody cover the Boo Hag, so I figured that it would be a pretty cool thing to cover since we've kind of found this niche where we kind of seem to do a lot more of the obscure off-the-wall stuff that most people don't talk about. So we're going to continue that trend and hop in today with the Boo Hag.
Let's get into it.
So, the Boohag is a mythological creature from Hoodoo folklore, known for its sinister ways of preying on unsuspecting victims as they sleep, such as the old hag in more modern accounts. According to the legend, this malevolent being appears as a hag with translucent skin, using dark magic to peel off its victim's skin and wear it as a disguise to walk amongst the living, almost reminiscent of Skinwalker folklore. And I guess I will pause for a second to see if you have any comments already on that first section, because I'm sure you already got a bunch of thoughts spinning around in your head.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure we're going to get into a lot of my thoughts as we go through it. But like you said, this checks a lot of boxes. I mean, we talk about the whole sleep paralysis thing a lot. So big sleep paralysis, kind of abduction, incubus, succubus type overtones in this to me. And then, you know, like you said, the whole skinwalker connection, I think that's pretty interesting, but, yeah, so I'll try to save some of my thoughts for when we get a little deeper into this, but yeah, right off the rip, some pretty cool stuff here to unpack, I think.
I mean, it comes from Hoodoo legend, but obviously it's a North Carolina thing, and you still have to think about all of like the native presence. And at least to me, this sounds a lot like some of the witch kind of lore, as far as like a lot of the Native American stuff goes, like Spearfingers, for example.
Yeah, was it North Carolina? I thought skimming through, it was kind of more like the South Carolina, like low country type area.
I guess North and South Carolina. Yeah, actually, it might be more South Carolina. Actually, wait, when I was looking through the show note things, I think I just automatically hopped on to North Carolina. So maybe this one's a little bit different because we are covering a different state, but still definitely one of the Carolinas.
So, you know, just a little bit of kind of my perspective. So once you get down in like the low country areas of South Carolina, like Charleston and, you know, those whole areas, there's a lot of, I don't know what the correct term would be, but I'd say like Afro-Caribbean type influences, like on the food and the culture and everything. So I think that's really interesting that it points out like the Hoodoo folklore. So, you know, granted, this is not far from where we're at right here, but it's a really different vibe than some of the more North Carolina, you know, areas and folklore and stuff like that. So I think, yeah, like I said, this is a fun one to get into because it's the next state over, but completely different kind of vibe than we got here in North Carolina. So
I guess I should put out a disclaimer right in the beginning of this, that a lot of this goes back to, of course, the plantation days of the Carolinas. So before anybody gets triggered by anything like that, obviously there's going to be a little bit of back and forth as far as like, again, with like the Hoodoo stuff, there's going to be some like African American background. And a lot of the time when this is happening is going to be, again, during the plantation days. So again, just a disclaimer out there that I don't want anybody to take anything the wrong way. We're just simply covering this. No opinions related to any of it whatsoever. Of course, other than racism's bad, but everybody don't should just know us. That at this point. But the Boohag legend is primarily rooted in African American folklore, particularly in the Gullah Geechee communities along the coastal regions of the southeastern United States, including South Carolina and Georgia. The Gullah Geechee people are descendants of enslaved Africans who retained many of their African traditions and beliefs, which significantly contributed to the development of the Boohag legend. One possible origin of the Boohag can be traced back to West African folklore. In West African folklore, there's a creature known as the Adi in the Ewe culture of Guana and Togo. The Adi is believed to be a vampire-like being that can take on human form during the day, but at night it transforms into its true supernatural self. These shape-shifting creatures, who avoid community gatherings, cooked food, and salt, were said to prey on their victims as they slept. It is believed that enslaved Africans brought these stories with them to the Americas, where they merged with other cultural influences to create the Boohag legend.
So something I thought was kind of interesting, if you don't mind me jumping in real quick.
Go for it.
And as we go through this, this idea of like salt being a deterrent to these things pops up time and time again. And I thought that was kind of interesting in like the whole, you know, the witchcraft vein of doing like salt circles or putting, you know, salt on your doorway or around your bed or things like that to ward off evil spirits. So, you know, I don't know if that comes from the whole, you know, there's a lot of connections between like witchcraft and then like the Hoodoo type stuff. But yeah, just something I thought was interesting.
If that is the case, what would be the least haunted place in the world?
I don't know, like a potato chip factory or something?
A salt mine.
Oh, there you go.
I had the drum sound effect here. I just know you can't hear it. Okay. What makes the boo hag even more terrifying is its ability to suck the breath out of its victims, leaving them weak and vulnerable. This creature is said to be as slippery as an eel, sliding through keyholes and cracks to reach its next prey. Its presence is often accompanied by a foul smell, sending shivers down the spine of those who encounter it, which also kind of seems somewhat reminiscent of like the Wendigo thing, because it's like the decaying creature that consumes the flesh of other creatures.
Well, I went somewhere slightly different with that. You know, we hear it all the time in Bigfoot encounters, like the sulfurous smell, but it's also really associated with like poltergeist activity and stuff like that. So it doesn't specify what kind of foul smell it is, but I thought that was kind of interesting. It kind of goes hand in hand with a lot of, you know, ghost, poltergeist, paranormal type stuff.
See, I was thinking that way too. I just assumed from the like translucent skin that it was going to be like a rotting smell. So yeah, we both kind of took that different ways, but I guess we could both be right with that one, because it doesn't necessarily specify. Throughout history, there have been chilling accounts of individuals encountering the boo hag, from eerie sightings in the dead of night to unexplained feelings of dread. The tales surrounding the creature continues to fascinate and terrify those who dare to delve into its lore. According to an autobiographical account of Jacob Stoyer, who was born enslaved in South Carolina in 1849, Stoyer wrote about hags and conjuring on a plantation in South Carolina. Stoyer wrote, "The witches among slaves were supposed to have been persons who worked with them every day, and they called the old hag and were called old hags or jack-lanterns. Those, both men and women, who, when they grew old, looked odd, were supposed to be witches. Sometimes after eating supper, the African-Americans would gather in each other's cabins, which looked over the large openings of the plantation. And when they would see a light at a great distance and saw it open and shut, they would say, 'There is the old hag.' And if it came from a certain direction where those lived who they called witches, one would say, 'Dat looks like old Aunt Susan.' Another said, 'No, dat look like old man hag.' Still another, 'I think dat look like old Uncle Rennie.'"
Can I jump in real quick?
Yeah, for sure. Sorry, I was having trouble with the old English way of writing on that one.
Kind of kind of tricky, but I think this is really cool about like seeing the light. Like that sounds like portal type shit to me, like portals or orbs. You know, how many stories have we heard about like Bigfoot type creatures or whatever coming out of these orbs? And then, you know, like the whole portal thing where people look through and it's like a window into somewhere else. So that's what popped into my mind when I was reading through the notes in that section.
I was going to say, it almost seems like it also could be some 1849 accounts of people basically seeing like orbs in general, like on property. So, I mean, that almost shows that it's not a factor of modern day technology. I mean, everybody likes to say swamp gas, but I mean, not everywhere that these lights are reported at have swamps. So, I mean, there's clearly something that's a strange phenomenon going on with these, regardless if you look at it from a scientific or a paranormal way.
Yeah, for sure.
But when the light disappears, they said that the witch had gone into the plantation and changed itself into a person and went around on the place talking with the people like others until those whom it wanted to bewitch went to bed. Then it would change itself to a witch again. They claimed that they rode human beings like horses, and the spittle that ran on the side of the cheek when one slept was the bridle that the witch rode with. If enslaved people did not have a Bible, they sprinkled a mixture of cayenne pepper and salt in the corner and around the room to protect themselves from boo hags.
There we go. Salt again.
Yep. I was going to say, getting past the hard text part, for anybody that was wondering why that part sounded so messed up, it was a direct section out of that person's encounter. So the writing was a little bit different, a little bit outdated. So I apologize for the choppiness as far as trying to read that. And I had to alter a couple words that I didn't want people to take the wrong way. So
which ones?
I'm going to say it on the air. Dude, it was kind of weird though, because diving into this, it was like, so you'd have reports that were from the African American side, and they would use, you know, their word of the day for that one. Cause again, I don't want anybody to take it the wrong way. And then there was other accounts that would be like the plantation owners and stuff that would be talking about these slave stories, and they use the hard N. So it was kind of weird researching this stuff, because I kind of had to make sure that I was reading information that was coming particularly from the African American folklore of it, rather than like the plantation owners putting their spin on all of it. So I tried to purposely like avoid that stuff, because I didn't want it to have any bad insinuations kind of underlaid in it, because more often than not, it seems like that kind of happens with that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
so
this one's going to be problematic enough without adding that extra layer to it.
Yeah, so I just avoided that altogether. So hopping back in, slave narratives of Galangiji African Americans in Georgia documented tales of boo hags from formerly enslaved people in the book Drums and Shadows. African Americans would talk about how hags were witches that sold their soul to the devil and have the power to change into animals and insects and drain their victims' spiritual essence.
So that kind of gets back to Wendigo type stuff too.
Mm-hmm. In Galan folklore, boo hags are similar to vampires. Unlike vampires, they gain sustenance from a person's breath as opposed to their blood by riding their victims. They have no skin and are red in order to be less conspicuous. They steal a victim's skin and use it for as long as it holds out, wearing it as one might wear clothing. They remove and hide the skin before going riding. So that being said, though, like they talk about the whole transformative aspect to them. Are they really transforming, or are they just taking the skin off that they're wearing of somebody else?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem like they're really shape-shifting that much.
But rather, they're a creature that wears the skin of something else, and there's not like a shape-shifting aspect or transformative aspect to it.
Yeah, it's not like they turn into a wolf or a dog or anything like that, it doesn't seem like.
When a hag determines a victim is suitable for riding, the hag generally gains access to the home through a small crack, crevice, or hole, then hangs itself over the sleeping/dazed victim, sucking in their breath. The act renders the victim helpless and induces a deep dream-filled sleep. The hag tends to leave the victims alive so as to use them again for their energy. However, if the victim struggles, the hag may take their skin, leaving the victim to suffer. After taking the victim's energy, the hag flies off and they must be in their own skin by dawn or be force-trapped without skin. When the victim awakes, they may feel short of breath, sick, and very dizzy, but generally, the victim only feels tired. An expression sometimes used in South Carolina is, "Don't let the hag ride ya." This expression may come from the boo hag legend itself. Just out of curiosity, have you ever heard that expression used, like in North Carolina?
I have not. No. But like I said, it's a really different culture when you get down there in like southern South Carolina on the coast. It kind of doesn't surprise me that isn't really said up here, you know?
See, like, correct me if I'm wrong, kind of how I'm imagining it is South Carolina, because I've obviously never been down there, particularly the area that you're talking about, does it kind of have like the same feel as like a New Orleans kind of like a place where it's like very kind voodoo kind of undertone to it?
Yeah, so like Charleston and Savannah have very much that kind of like voodoo, old South, New Orleans type vibe. And so basically, I don't know why it didn't kind of spread as far north as like we are here, but I don't know if you've ever heard of I think the book is called Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil or something like that, but it's set in Savannah, I believe, and it talks a whole lot about it's kind of a novel, but kind of not really. But it talks a whole lot about like this kind of voodoo culture in, these deep South areas. So that's where I learned a lot about this sort of thing, was just from books and like Anthony Bourdain shows and stuff like that, you know?
I mean, honestly, after having generations there and being within the same area, and everybody obviously knows that when everybody was set free, they kind of were like, they congregated in specific areas and they push people into specific areas. And then once you have your like roots and foundation somewhere, it's like, even if people move out, like that's where the roots and foundation are. So I think it's gonna be one of those things that's always underlied in the culture, but it's never going to move out of there because that's like the origin of where that culture developed in the first place. Kind of like how New Orleans kind of works, you know?
Yeah. It's like super, you know, regional, it seems like.
But hopping back in, despite its fearsome reputation, there are ways to protect oneself from the malevolent grasps of the Boohag. The Gullian people came up with unique ways of battling the Boohag. One method was to put a loaded gun across the head of the bed. Since Boohags hate the smell of gunpowder, which is ironic because it's almost kind of that sulfury smell, another was to sleep with a fork under the pillow to keep from being ridden. Yet another was to lay a broom on the floor.
Jumping right there about the fork thing.
Yeah, go for it.
This reminded me of, do you remember when we were talking about Wizard Clip and like the Snallygaster and things like that, and people would like hang scissors on their door to like keep the Snallygaster away? I don't know, forks, scissors, I don't know if there's something there or not, but that's what it made me think of.
Yeah, it is very reminiscent of that. I'm not sure where like the original folklore of that comes from, but there's definitely a root to utensils. Maybe it's the fact of like being able to cut something with it. I mean, not so much with a fork. I guess you could stab something with a fork.
It seems more symbolic than anything else to me, you know?
Yeah, like, don't eat me. Like, here's a fork. Go eat something else.
Yeah, who knows? But anyway, just something I thought was kind of cool.
Yet another was to lay a broom on the floor, since the Boohag would be inclined to stop and count every straw until the sun came up, which, for anybody that is familiar with vampire folklore, very reminiscent of that, except for, I believe it's, what, grains of rice, or you throw coins, and vampires have to stop and count every single piece of rice. So, I mean, that's reminiscent of vampires,
there's a
too.
A lot of vampire stuff in here, especially like they have to be back in their other skin before the sun comes out and things like that. So it kind of makes you wonder what all those old legends are actually based off of.
And I mean, considering this thing's a Boohag, which is a form of a witch, another kind of weird thing to think about is the whole idea with Cinderella with having to be home before midnight. And technically, the fairy godmother was in a weird, was a witch. So
a good looking witch.
There's something about that whole like being home before a certain time thing on purpose, like the magical only lasts so long or something.
Yeah, definitely.
With every folklore story, the age-old tradition offer a glimpse of hope in the face of darkness. And kind of hopping into some commonly shared stories as far as the Boohag goes, I collected two of them from some of the North Carolina, South Carolina pages, and these are supposed to be ones that were commonly kind of passed around. So since you guys don't want to probably listen to my voice the entire episode, I'm going to pass at least the first story to Oren to read.
All right, so this comes from the North Carolina Ghosts website, and it goes a little something like this. So once there were two men who had been friends all their lives. They married two beautiful women about the same time, and everything seemed fine. But one day, one of the men came to his friend and asked him, "When you wake up at night, is your wife in bed with you?" "She sure is," said the friend. "Why do you ask?" "When I lie down in bed at night, my wife is with me. But when I wake up in the middle of the night, she's gone. But then come morning, she's back in bed." "Man," said the friend, "I think you married a Boohag." Now they knew this was serious. A Boohag is a kind of witch that can slip out of her skin and fly around at night and cause all kinds of trouble in the world. A Boohag can kill a man just by sucking all the blood from his body out through his nose. They'll get on a man and ride him at night so he can't move and he can't breathe. A Boohag is not something you'd ever want to meet, and sure not something you'd ever want to be married to. So the man asked his friend what he should do. So I just got to jump in real quick.
The mixing of folklore where people all kind of have different aspects of it. That was the first thing I was thinking of, too.
Well, to me, there's a lot of like sexual undertones to this whole thing. And I'm almost wondering if, you know, these are from, you know, like you said, the plantation days when women were very, you know, discriminated against. I wonder if this was just like a way to try to squash female, you know, I don't want to say promiscuity, but like from running around on your husband or what, you know, if your wife's not in bed with you, she's a Boohag, she's out causing trouble in the world. So I don't know, but I just, the more we get into this, the more this kind of reeks of like sexual repression to me almost.
Yeah, because it's almost like the Salem witch trials concept where like,
yeah, exactly.
If your wife is out cheating, you can point the finger. And I mean, when it comes to the plantation days, of course, stuff was a little bit different, but I'm sure that there was still somewhat of justice in between people that were enslaved at the time. So like if there was like a cheating wife or something like that, I'm sure that that was something that they kind of dealt with all on their own aside from things. Or if there was, say, for example, somebody that was a slave who was killing other slaves, I'm sure that's something that kind of gets dealt with amongst the people that are enslaved rather than like the plantation owners themselves. So of course, like you still need a background story to point the finger at your cheating wife. So, I mean, this could have been an easy out as far as that goes.
Yeah. Don't let your wife have too many thoughts or opinions or anything like that, or she'll turn into a boo hag. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I'll jump back in. You got to wait till she slips out of her skin in the middle of the night. And then you find that skin. Look under the stairs. That's where boo hags like to hide their skins. You take that skin and you pour salt and pepper all over it. Then she won't be able to get her skin back on. So there we go. We got salt again.
And pepper.
Yeah.
Making a dish out of this thing, man. All you need to put in some stew water and you can make
Boo
a stew out of it.
Delicious.
Boo hag skin stew.
And so that night, the man went to bed with his wife and pretended to sleep. About midnight, he felt her slip out of bed beside him. He waited for her to get downstairs and then got out of bed and then quietly hid where she could not see him. He saw his wife pull off all her skin and roll it up into a ball and hide it under the stairs. Then she flew right up the chimney, going out to cause trouble in the world. Well, that man didn't waste any time. He went and got the skin and salted it and peppered it real good, then rolled it back up into a ball and hid it and put it back under the stairs where he found it. Then he went back to bed and waited until early in the morning when he heard a noise of something coming down the chimney. And he heard his wife speaking softly, "Skin, skin, you know me. Skin, skin, this is me. Skin, skin, you know me. Skin, skin, this is me." But he knew that with all the salt and pepper, she couldn't get the skin back on. He waited and heard his wife speak again, "Skin, skin, you know me. Skin, skin, this is me. Skin, skin, you know me. Skin, skin, this is me." And he knew that she was stuck without her skin. He heard her coming up the stairs and pretended to be asleep. He felt his wife crawl into bed with him and wrap herself up tight in the sheet. But he reached his hand over and could feel something warm and raw and rubbery in the bed next to him. After that, he didn't need to pretend to sleep. When the morning broke, the man got up and said to his wife, "Time to get up, time for breakfast." But she said, "I ain't getting up, I'm sick." And lay there wrapped up tight in that sheet, not showing one inch of herself. The man said he'd go get the doctor, but she said the doctor cost too much money. So the man said he was going to go hoe the garden. The man went outside and hid under the window. Sure enough, he heard his wife come down the stairs and call out again, "Skin, skin, you know me, skin, skin, this is me." That was enough for the man. He went down to fetch the conjuring man who would know what to do. He told the conjurer man his story, and the conjurer man told him to go home and start a big barrel of pitch boiling, and he'd be by shortly. So the man went home and built a fire in the garden and started a big barrel of pitch boiling on it. Soon the conjurer man walked up the road and the two of them went inside and went upstairs where the woman was back in bed, all wrapped up tight in her sheet again. The conjurer man said, "What ails you, woman?" And she said there was nothing wrong, but the conjurer man wasn't having any of that. He ripped the sheet right off her and there she was, laying there, all raw and bloody. "Man, you done married a hag," said the conjurer man. And they grabbed her and carried her out to the garden where they threw her in the big barrel of boiling pitch and burned that hag alive. What else could they do?
Not a happy ending. I mean, guys, kind of not a happy ending of the story, I guess, for the man at least. I mean, getting back into that whole idea that you were talking about as far as kind of repressing women's sexuality at the time. I mean, definitely a possibility.
Yeah, and you know, like you said about the whole witch trials thing, I mean, they burned a witch, you know? So. Mm-hmm.
And hopping into our second story, this one's called The Boo Hag, and it's retold by S.E. Scholler from Spooky, North Carolina. You know,
I think I've seen this book in bookstores like all around here, if it's the one I'm thinking of. I don't have this one, but I think I know the book.
Is it one of those like very localized books, or it has like the black and white covers? Because I got a bunch of those that I see all over Michigan, too.
No, I don't think so. I'll have to send a picture of it to you later, but I've definitely seen this one.
Perfect, then. It's just more of a reason to go and pick up the book now, right?
Yeah, for sure.
You know how they say some folks are lucky at cards and some are lucky at love? Well, that fit Bobby Hansen to a T. He was the best poker player in the country, but somehow he couldn't find himself a bride. Oh, he proposed to several girls and even got accepted by a few, but they always got cold feet a day or two before the wedding, and it was bye-bye Bobby. After the third time, Bobby was mightily discouraged, and his pa felt real sore for him. They worked together in the family grocery store, and Bobby would sometimes sit on top of the pickle barrel and tell his pa all his woes. And his pa would tell him to hang in there because a nice lady was on the way. Neither of them believed it, but it made both of them feel better to hear it said. Well, the day after their latest talk, the old woman who pulled her barge through the swamp to deliver milk and eggs to the grocery store had a long talk with Bobby's pa. Seems she had this daughter who was hankering after a husband with a good steady job, and the old woman thought Bobby would do the job nicely. She suggested they introduce the pair at the next dance, and Bobby's pa agreed. The night of the dance, Bobby's pa insisted that his son dress in his best. Bobby was dragging his feet a little, remembering all those women who played him false and not wanting to go, but his pa dragged him out anyways. Well, the moment Bobby clapped eyes on the dark-eyed, red-lipped girl from the swamp, he was head over heels in love. Her eyes sparkled like the sunlight on the bay. Her skin was as creamy as new milk. Her voice was low and sweet. The pair cuddled and cooed and waltzed the whole night long, and came sunrise, Bobby was all for bringing his new love before the visiting priest who delivered his sermons in the grocery store, since there wasn't no church in that vicinity, and getting married right away. Well, the girl was willing to get married, but not by the priest. Let's go to Beaumont and have the judge marry us, she said to Bobby, and he was so smitten he agreed, though it would have been quicker and easier to just walk a mile down the road to see the priest. By the next evening, they were wed, and Bobby brought his pretty bride to the nice little cottage he rented just down the road from the family grocery. It had a nice front porch with a swing, a big bedroom on the second floor, and a big attic with a window that could be made up into a second guest room should this new mother-in-law come to visit from her home in the swamp. After fixing him a nice dinner, Bobby's new bride sat a while in the rocking chair next to their bed while Bobby yawned and watched her fondly. She cuddled under the blanket and knitted and hummed, and Bobby's eyes grew heavy. He didn't wake up until early morning when his new bride crept into the bed all hot and sweaty and fell asleep at once. When he asked asked her where she'd been, she wouldn't answer him. Bobby was mighty sore that his bride had snuck out on him and on their wedding night. But when she got snippet and her eyes blazed like they did when he questioned her, he grew frightened and backed up. Life took on an odd pattern for Bobby. During the day, everything was perfect. His wife was sweet and pretty and loving. She kept the house sparkling clean and cooked him wonderful meals. But each night she refused to come to bed after supper. Like their wedding night, she sat up singing and rocking and knitting until he was asleep and did not come to bed until just before dawn. She was always sweaty and cranky when she came to bed and went to sleep before Bobby could question her. Bobby was very confused and upset by the behavior and finally confided in his pa one morning after opening up the grocery store. Bobby's pa was awfully worried. The visiting priest had gone on to the next parish and there was no one they could consult but the local conjure woman. So he sent Bobby to her with a couple of chickens as a gift. The conjure woman knew all of the hoodoo magic and was an excellent herbalist. Local folks went to her when they were sick on account of the doctor living nearly 20 miles away. When she heard Bobby's story, she told him to pretend to go to sleep that night and watch what his new bride did. Then he was to come back and tell her everything. Bobby agreed. The next evening, he pretended to fall asleep while the bride rocked and sang in her chair. Then he followed her up to the attic and watched through the crack in the open door as she sat down at the spinning wheel and spun off her skin, leaving only pulsing red muscles and blue veins. She was a terrifying sight, and she sprang through the window and flew away into the night. Bobby ran out to the privy and was sick after he saw her. Who or what was the monster he had married? He was still trembling and in shock when his bride looked like a nearly normal person, crept into bed at dawn, and he had trouble behaving normally at breakfast. As soon as he could get away, Bobby ran into the home of the Conjure Woman and told her about the spinning wheel and the terrible skinless creature who flew away from the attic. "A boohag," the Conjure Woman said at once. "You've married a boohag." "What's a boohag?" asked Bobby. "A boohag is a witch and shapeshifter," said the Conjure Woman. "She lures men into her trap and then delivers them to her boo daddy, who eats their flesh and gnaws their bones. And that's what she'll do to you if you don't get rid of her first." So she got a boo daddy.
I was going to say, you know, we've been trying to figure out a nickname for me for the intros. I'm throwing boo daddy out there. That's a possibility. We'll have to see what the listeners think. Big boo daddy Oren.
Big boo daddy. And I just got to make a shirt with you dressed up as like a supernatural pimp.
Hey, not much of a stretch, man. Except it totally is.
That's what she said.
Anyway, Big Boo Daddy will shut up now.
Hopping back into the Boo Daddies. The Conjure Woman told Bobby to get himself some blue paint. As soon as the boo hag left the house that night, he was to spread blue paint on every window frame and every door frame and make sure it was 2 coats thick. A boo hag couldn't fly through a window or door that was painted blue. And if she didn't get back into her skin before dawn, she would be trapped without it and be revealed for the monster she was. So he was to leave one tiny window unpainted and kept it open a sliver so that the boo hag could squeeze through. Then he was to fill up the skin with salt and pepper, which is the same as the last story, which would burn her up from the inside out. And Bobby promised to do exactly as the Conjure Woman said. That night, Bobby lingered over his dinner, looking with sad eyes at the pretty woman sitting opposed to him. He knew she was really a monster inside, but it was so nice to have a little wife in his home. He hated the idea to see her go, but he didn't want to get eaten by a boo daddy. And that was his fate if he stayed. So she gets me every time. Fucking boo daddy.
Boo daddy.
Boo daddy.
Classic boo daddy.
So he went up to their bedroom and pretended to fall asleep while she rocked and sang and knitted. Then he followed her quietly upstairs and put salt and pepper into her skin after her ugly red-muscled blue-veined figure had flown out the window to her boo daddy. He spent the rest of the night painting every door and window frame with blue paint, leaving only one small unpainted window open in the cellar. He nailed it up so that it would open no further than a crack, just as the Conjure Woman instructed him. Then he hid himself behind a large chest of drawers up in the attic to wait for the boo hag. Just before dawn, the boo hag came flying up to the attic window. As soon as she touched the blue frame, she gave a shriek of pain and rage. Bobby listened as she flew around the house, testing each window and door, howling like a banshee when it burned her skinless hands. Then she found the little window in the cellar, and he would hear the thump as she landed beside it, followed by a painful whispering sound as she squeezed and squeezed herself through the narrow opening. Her skinless red muscles and blue veins tearing painfully against the rough wood. The boo hag ran up the 3 flights of stairs into the attic and squeezed into her skin as fast as she could. She just barely got into it when the first light of dawn shone over the horizon. Then, that was when the salt and pepper did their work, burning the boo hag from the inside out. With a scream of agony, she flung herself out the attic window. The glass shattered everywhere as she tried to fly away, tearing the skin to get it off. But it was too late. She exploded into tiny pieces right over the swamp, and the alligators had them a mighty feast of cooked boo hag for breakfast that morning. So Bobby was once again without a wife. But bachelorhood looked much better to him after that, and he never went looking for a wife again. Of course, after he made a pile of money in oil, the girls started chasing him. But that's another story.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. So yeah, getting into different variations of these stories, again, that kind of goes back into the whole like vampire lore lore aspect of them exploding in the sun. Like that's the only thing I pick up from that.
Yeah, I mean, all I'll add is I think in a lot of these old stories, like the Wendigo and stuff like that, there's some aspect of some real world supernatural something that these are based off of. And there's this other aspect where they're just kind of like cautionary tales almost, you know, like I'm sure whatever vampires or, you know, witches or whatever is based off of, there is part of that in here, but it's also, you know, don't trust any trifling woman, you know? So like, I don't know. I think it's interesting how it seems like in a lot of these stories, they take some nugget of something that probably is based off reality and then just spin this whole tale around it.
I mean, a lot of this stuff reminds me again of a lot of like the Native American witch stuff,
exactly.
Which yeah. also is one of those things that you kind of don't know how to always take it, because they had a lot of stories that were supposed to be for teaching a lesson simply, and they weren't supposed to be taken extremely literally. But then on the other side, they have folklore creatures that are supposed to be taken literally. So it's like all the stuff is passed down by word of mouth. It's kind of hard to like ask somebody directly like, hey, is this story supposed to be, you know, symbolic of something, or is this like a literal story? Because even going into like a lot of the Native American stuff being passed down, I mean, that might not be a question that a lot of them are able to answer too, because they don't know how ancient and old these stories may be.
Yeah. And you know, we've kind of been talking, it seems like, a lot about like the Bible and stuff recently on the show, and it could be the same thing as far as that goes. You know, they are, you know, parables and cautionary tales and, you know, lessons to be learned, but it's also a historical document to a certain extent. And it could be the same thing going on here. You know, there's these creatures that, yeah, you really did have to fucking look out for them, but also don't let your woman have too many thoughts and opinions, or she'll run around to her boo daddy, you know? So, I mean, it can be more than one thing at a time, I think.
I mean, shit, dude, going back into the Native American witches thing, I mean, there could have been remnants of Native American witches, and then they kind of combined it with their hoodoo folklore, and that's kind of where you get this cluster from, is they were describing something they were seeing, they were just fitting it into their context that they're aware of, and again, it's multiple people calling the same thing different names.
Yeah, I think you're probably spot on there.
But as you guys saw from those stories, a lot of these have different variations. So I want to make a section where I kind of went over the variations of the Boo Hag. So hopping back in, the Boo Hag legend has taken on various forms and variations throughout the years, each with its own unique characteristics and storytelling traditions. Here are some notable versions of the Boo Hag legend. Number one, the traditional Boo Hag. In this version, the Boo Hag is depicted as a malevolent spirit that peels off its skin at night, leaving it behind as it goes out to steal the breath and energy from unsuspecting victims. To protect themselves, people would often place brooms or straw near their beds, as the Boo Hag would become trapped if it tried to re-enter its skin through these objects. Variation 2, Mrs. Hag. In some versions, the Boo Hag takes on a more human-like appearance, often disguising itself as a neighbor or family member during the day. At night, it would remove its skin to feed on the sleeping victim's essence. This version plays on the fear of betrayal from someone who you trust, which, again, diving into what we were saying with a lot of those stories. And just a little snippet from one of the people who wrote about it. The thing about the Boo Hag is it has the ability to slip into a victim's skin and wear someone else as a costume, which again seems very skinwalker-esque. I can't describe that part enough, where again, people coming over with hoodoo folklore and traditions and trying to describe creatures that the Native Americans were seeing through their context. Hopping into variation 3, variations by region. Different regions have their own unique interpretations of the Boo Hag legend. For instance, in the Low Country of South Carolina, the Boo Hag is believed to be a female vampire-like creature, while in the Sea Islands, it is often portrayed as a witch-like figure. Variation 4, cross-cultural influences. Over years, the Boo Hag legend has intermingled with other cultural beliefs, resulting in hybrid versions. For example, some versions of the Boo Hag incorporate elements of European witchcraft and shape-shifting folklore, which is, again, just another thing we're talking about. So,
yeah, definitely.
And while the exact origin of the Boo Hag legend remains a subject of debate, several theories shed light on its possible genesis. Number one would be African ancestry. As mentioned earlier, the Boohag legend likely originated from West African folklore brought by the Americans, brought to the Americas by enslaved Africans. The themes of spirit possession and life force extraction bear a resemblance to similar African legends. The next one is the supernatural explanation. Some believe that the Boohag legend may have arisen as a way to explain sleep paralysis and the eerie sensation of being unable to move during the night. People experiencing sleep paralysis may have attributed their experiences to a malevolent spirit like the Boohag, and again, getting into the old hag, like we're saying a lot earlier in the show, too.
Yeah, I think this is definitely just one of those language-type situations that we talk about all the time. I mean, we've got the Boohag, we've got the old hag, we've got, you know, incubus and succubus type stuff. We've got now abduction type stories. So to me, this is one of those things. We're all talking about the same thing here. We're talking about a very real phenomenon. It's just what people have chosen to call it. And again, describing it with the best language they have throughout the centuries.
This one is kind of weird in the aspect of it's such like a blended thing between so many different folklore legends that I don't think I've ever covered anything where it's like, it checks boxes for so many different varieties of different things where it's like, if there ever was a hybrid blending of folklore, like this is it. Like I've never seen something more blended than this.
But it kind of makes sense when you think about it. You know, these Afro-Caribbean people came over with their hoodoo folklore and traditions, and then that was blended and intermingled with the more, you know, European settlers in the area, and then probably Native American legend that was still there. And so when you combine all that in one fucking big melting pot, this is what you get.
But I mean, shit, you go with the Europeans, the Native Americans, and the African American aspect on this one. It seems like, again, Native American witches, and then you have like the witches in European folklore, which are like the old ladies that are usually naked vampire, more often than not, middle of the woods. And then this, like, they're all visually described as the same thing. It's just that the variations of like how they interact are different, but like the visual's the same. So obviously with that clue, I feel like they're all definitely seeing something, but again, just a matter of putting it in their own context.
Yeah, definitely.
And going into the last explanation is social commentary. The Boohag legend may also serve as a metaphorical expression of fear and anxiety faced by enslaved African Americans. It could possibly symbolize the oppressive forces that drain their energy and life forces. So again, even getting into the thing with the whole Native American legends is it a metaphor or is it literal?
Or some combination of the two.
Exactly. As we wrap up today's episode, The Boohag, we hope you've enjoyed the spine-tingling journey into the realm of folklore and mystery. Remember, dear listeners, to stay vigilant and brave in the faces of the unknown. Until next time, stay curious, stay cautious, and never let the shadows consume your light. Hopefully tonight, The Boohag will spare you in your dreams.
And watch out for the Boo Daddy.
Dun, dun, dun! That Boohag Daddy's gonna get you.
That's what she said!
Ayo.
Ayo. So you got any closing thoughts, ideas, anything that you want to mention about this before we start wrapping up, man?
No, I think I'm good. I kind of hit everything as we were going through. No need to beat a dead horse about this, or a dead Boohag, if you will. But yeah, this was a fun one. This is not something I really knew a whole lot about. So it's kind of funny. You know, it's from basically right next door and I didn't really know anything about it. So I'm glad we did this one. And thank you for putting the legwork in and sharing this Boohag story with us. So,
hey man, I'm really digging doing the off the wall obscure stuff. So as long as the listeners are enjoying it, we can kind of almost make this our niche where we just hit all this stuff that's just weird and most people just don't talk about, man. Because I got a plethora still of this weird stuff if all those listeners out there are enjoying the local legends aspect.
There was something I did want to ask you before we leave, though. If you recall, what show did Gabby see this on?
I'll have to ask her. She watches a lot of like doctor shows, so I almost feel like it may have been like mentioned in a doctor show, which could have been again linking with like a sleep paralysis concept.
Gotcha. Okay. Just curious.
But for all the listeners out there, I will ask her where exactly she got this from. And in the next episode, I will mention in the beginning. So if anybody wants to watch the episode of the show, whatever that she saw it in, you guys will be able to go and check that out. So just stay tuned for next episode and I'll make sure that I get that stuff back to you. And if you guys enjoyed this episode, don't forget to leave a review or rating for the show on iTunes or Spotify. Hopefully 5 stars. And if we get 5-star reviews, of course, we will read them on the show, give you guys a massive shout out. And with all of that, of course, the community is going to keep growing. We're going to have more people that are sharing their encounters. We're going to have access to having bigger guests on the show. So honestly, boosting up the show is only going to benefit all of us as a whole community. And anything you guys do, we greatly appreciate. And even if you're one of those people that don't listen to every single episode, if you guys put the show on auto download, that is absolutely fantastic. Again, keeps boosting us up in the algorithms. And sharing the show through word of mouth, another fantastic way. If you guys think that anybody would enjoy a particular episode, or if you think somebody would enjoy the show as a whole, share it with them. Maybe it'll give you guys something new to talk about. And I can't say this enough. We wouldn't be able to do the show without you guys. So anything you guys are doing out there, we greatly appreciate. And if you guys don't do any of that stuff, we just hope you enjoy the show at the minimum.
And you guys know how the internet works. Do all the internet things. Contact us through the email, social media, submission forms, all that good stuff. And you can share fan art, have a conversation, be a guest, invite us on your show to be a guest, or sponsor the show. I don't know why anybody would want to do any of those things, but hey, the offer's on the table.
Hey, man, we got friends in the community that like and sponsoring the show. Dave's real excited about sponsoring the show, but Dave's a good guy. So, I mean, I can't say that enough. I love Dave. And I know Squatch guys, Rick and Hans, they both actually love sponsoring us too. So,
well, hey, they just don't know that I'm the big bad boo daddy yet.
So. I'm going to make that a shirt, man. I promise you. I'm going to make your face on a Papa Legba looking thing that says boo daddy.
Oh, I'm all for it, man.
Better pay that boo daddy. And with that, everything that we've mentioned throughout the entire show is all available in the link tree, which is available down in the show description. I have been the one that they call Shane Squatch.
And I've been Oren.
And guys, again, I tell you every single episode because some of y'all might forget. And you guys always have to remember to be your true, authentic selves, because that's all you can really be in this world. So guys, always stay bizarre. Bizarre. Bizarre.
Big bad boo daddy.